Greetings, Meltopians. Are you looking to delve deeper into the world of Meltopia? Then check out our Patreon, where you can find written mythos pieces, world maps, found footage, art, Patreon-exclusive shows, and more. Just go to patreon.com/Meltopia and join one of our tiers for access to great new content. Brave the forbidden and embrace the darkness.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Amongst the Thunderheads, A solemn cloud hovered high above the group, casting a shadow darker than any storm could muster. Vorn looked over at Wesley. He was all cut up from self-inflicted injuries, and his eyes peered somewhere beyond the world, somewhere horrific. Arcos carried him upon his shoulder with ease, though the monster surely preferred to leave him behind. No one really knew what caused Wesley to do what he'd done, but they all presumed it was the strange song of Lydissa Gravemore. While most of the group saw it as a tragic but possible outcome, Salvatore held a grudge against Arcos for leading the group there, accusing him of sabotaging the mission. Vorn assumed much of Sal's ire stemmed from his ongoing rivalry with Arcos. He imagined Salvatore wasn't really mad at Arcos per se, but rather Sal was using him as a proxy for the Bell Fiend, who had experimented on him before being absorbed by their new benefactor. If anything, Arcos was a victim in all this, despite his Herculean stature. He was a slave, and the group, whether they wanted to admit it or not, had simply handed his reins over to another subjugator. Still, there was nothing to be done about it now. Vorn wasn't sure where they were now. Riva kept glancing around as well, trying to get his bearings. Wherever they were, they had certainly exited the ruins of Sablefen and entered yet another strange biome of Cribland. Vorn would have said it was a mist-covered forest, but it lacked the features required, or at least those features were so perverted they disqualified the place. For one, it lacked trees in the traditional sense. Instead, there stood thin, wispy structures that reached up into the sky before fragmenting into something akin to webbing. Their narrow bodies were a somber gray and seemed to flit whimsically upon subtle breaths of wind. They appeared to have roots, or some other kind of tuber that extended into the soil, as the ground was festooned with a strange kind of black vasculature. Looking closer, he could see that they pulsated ever so slightly. Were these living organisms? Then there was the local wildlife. The bugs were particularly disconcerting, resembling demonic corruptions of insects more than typical pests. On a branch next to him, what Vorin could only describe as a gray locust about the size of his foot, sat devouring another alien creature, this one with a multitude of barbed proboscis. The sinister locust pulled parts of its victim into an axis of razor-sharp mandibles, the sound of it nearly turning his stomach. He also caught the briefest glimpse of a quadrupedal animal, most of it obscured by the undulating tethers of the tree-like things surrounding them. What he saw was enough to make him glad he'd missed the rest.
Arcos, where exactly are we? This place seems unsafe.
Have you not learned yet, little thing? Everywhere in Keon is dangerous. There are no bastions here, only death, or worse.
Yeah, thanks for the pep talk. Something tells me you're purposely leading us to these shitty fucking places to knock us off one by one.
I do not deny the wish to kill each and every one of you. Regrettably, I am unable to do so given my circumstances. But if you and yours have the fortitude to carry out your mission, that can hardly be put on me.
Hey, fuck you! Wesley didn't have the benefit of being some fucked up, roided out experiment designed to murder whatever his master's pointed at. Arcos' expression warped into a hateful sneer, his eyes carving holes into Salvatore.
Benefit? Me and my kind have been under the boot heel of another for centuries. Deprived of our free will, always on the brink of extinction by our master's latest invention. We did not have the option of being frail. It was, is, either endure or die. We haven't the privilege of being meek.
Hey, don't skirt the issue, you...
Suddenly, growls issued from somewhere in front of them. At first, the sea of mist obscured the things, just disembodied sounds floating in the air. But as they came closer, shadows began to appear against the fog. When they breached the haze, Vorin could make out certain features. They seemed to be horribly twisted mammals of some sort, a malign cross between wolves and bears. They were the size of grizzlies, but had the athletic build of a timber wolf.
Their mouths were lined with jagged teeth, and their backs sprouted a cadre of tentacles that ended in salivating, snapping maws. Most bizarre were the pairs of almost human-like arms and hands that extended out from beneath their chests. The things made a strange and alien sound. A snuffling, snarling, keening chorus that set Vorn's teeth on edge as they slowly closed in on the group. Jesus Christ! What the fuck are those things? Is there anything in this goddamn continent that doesn't look like the product of some fucked up orgy on Monster Island? Monster Island? It's a Godzilla reference, you wouldn't get it. Arcos ignored Salvatore and Moffat as he handed the limp Wesley over to Salvatore and stepped in front of the group, ready to engage the pack of ravenous-looking beasts. Part of Vorin wanted to believe that Arcos's willingness to take the brunt of the attack was born from some fondness for the group, but it was most likely due to his thirst for battle. Just as it seemed the creatures would clash, Vorin heard a kind of loud groaning all around them, as if the very forest was coming alive. Suddenly, the webbed tendrils above descended with terrifying speed. Once wispy, they were now twined together in groups, forming wicked, spear-like weapons that shot in and out of the beast with blinding swiftness. From under the creature's feet, the vein-like structures beneath the ground breached the soil, wrapping around their feet and legs. The wolf-like things yelped and whined as they were impaled and crushed at the same time. Finally, the ground opened up like a great maw. Jagged rocks like teeth sprouted from the hole's rim, grinding the creatures into gory pulp as they were thrown inside by the living veins. The maw swallowed the beast into its muddy depths before folding in on itself and disappearing. In moments, it was gone, replaced by innocuous terrain no different than the next hill, the next hollow. The group stood frozen as the earth rumbled a final time, cutting wild glances between each other and a thoroughly disappointed Arcos. Salvatore broke the silence. What the fuck was that? Are you fucking shitting me? The ground and trees could just do that?
Add, Arcos, perhaps a bit of explanation would help. We're clearly in a less than hospitable place.
We will not be harmed. My kind have traversed this place many times. It knows better than to attack me.
It fucking knows better? Do you hear yourself?
Arcos, once again irritated he needed to explain, begrudgingly spoke.
It is called the Gnashing Glens. This region was once the dwelling place of an ever-ravenous beast, a thing of yawning maws, yearning teeth, and absolute hunger. It could not be sated. It devoured all within its grasp. What it was, no one knows, but it stood in the way of the prince in his conquests, so one of them had to go. It is said that the prince battled the thing for days. Screams and caterwauls echoed for miles, causing kingdoms to rattle and mountains to shake. Finally, the prince slew the beast, leaving its carcass in the forest it once called home. However, even the Prince of Snakes could not quell the hunger within the thing, as its blood, as well as its spirit, were said to have seeped into the forest floor, cursing it with the same endless hunger. However, it was much weakened by its physical demise and, while its appetite is still ever wanting, it remembers he who bested it. Thus, it remembers me and mine as well. But you would do well to keep close. It is an opportunistic and clever thing, and will work to throw you off the beaten path if it can. We will want to hurry as well, for even I can test its patience. Now, if you're satisfied, I suggest we move on.
Vorn, Salvatore, and Rivas shared a weary glance.
How much longer until we're out of this place?
If we hurry, we can make it out by nightfall. But I have not been here in quite some time. It may have grown since then.
Grown? What the fuck do you mean by grown?
This place is born from an insatiable hunger. The more it consumes, the more it grows.
And how long has it been since you were here last?
Perhaps a year.
Oh, fuck.
Taking Wesley from Salvatore's arms, Arcos turned, as if signaling he would answer no more questions, and began to walk. With no other choice available to them, the group followed. While Riva was understandably quiet, Moffat also hadn't said much. Strangely, he seemed concerned, but not about their surroundings. Rather, his eyes kept going to Wesley. There was a certain scrutiny to his gaze, as if he were trying to burrow into the man's mind, seek out his troubles. It mystified Vorin. Most of the time, Moffat and Wesley were at each other's throats, but now, Cyrus showed some semblance of concern. Normally, Vorin would have assumed the man felt some regret for his past actions. But Cyrus was a Moffat, and so Vorin knew it just wasn't that simple. There was something going on, something he couldn't yet see. And Moffat wasn't the only one keeping secrets. Salvatore was hiding something too. Riva could see it as well. Vorin couldn't imagine what it could be, but he figured it would come out eventually. Salvatore didn't seem like the type who could sit on a secret very long. Night began to fall, and the group still treaded through the gnashing glens. The place took on a more ominous tone at night. Everything seemed to move subtly, causing Vorin to twist and turn every few moments. What he thought was rain on his head turned out to be thick strings of drool. Were the trees salivating? Occasionally, he could hear the bellow of something being devoured, that high-pitched screech that only escapes the lungs of something in the greatest pain. The earth seemed to growl beneath him, and he thought he heard a kind of churning noise, as if the wet machinery of digestion were at work somewhere below. He imagined the giant underground caves as throats of dirt and mud, swallowing anything unfortunate enough to fall within the predatory woodland's grasp. As the sun died in the distance, Moffat lit his lantern, and a hideous shadow show displayed across the forest. Monstrous forms writhed and twisted across the canopy, things made of mouths and teeth, bodies that ebbed and flowed like the riptides of a tumultuous ocean. One shadow consumed the next, one ever rapacious wave of gluttony splashing up against another, a never-ending feast.
Well, it's something you don't see every day.
Everything on this continent is something you don't see every day.
I imagine you and River must be used to that kind of thing, yes?
Not to this degree, but, yes, we've had our run-ins with quite a few strange things. You?
Well, I've seen many things, sometimes much to my chagrin. But necessity makes for odd bedfellows.
You're referencing, of course, the well-known secret that the Moffats and Kerwins are suspected of trafficking with the Walks of Darkness, playing both sides of the field.
What better way to win a game than to know what each team is doing,
Question is, whose team are you on?
If only things were so dichotomous.
Aren't they?
Let's use the tiring but appropriate analogy of chess, shall we? From the chess piece's point of view, there are only two teams, black and white. But what they don't see is that they are merely the tools of conquest by two other unknowable players. Further still, those two players have been carefully crafted by a system controlled by yet more mysterious players. Perhaps they play chess to acquire higher social status, or maybe they hone their skills to show off their superior intellect. Like the chess pieces, their actions are not their own, but molded by another unseen hand that wound them up and let them go. My point is, if you think there are only two teams, you might want to try seeing the world from a higher vantage.
Sounds exactly what I would expect from a Moffat, or a Kerwin. The not everything is black and white argument, or things are more complicated than you know trope.
You deny the complexity of the world. A strange claim by an ink dragon.
And why is that?
Ink dragons are known for their worldliness. Not because they've traveled the world, of course, but because they've absorbed its knowledge from countless vellum, papyrus, hide, and paper pages. I would think someone so knowledgeable wouldn't have such a simple perspective on things.
Oh, I never denied the world's complexity, Cyrus. Only that the Moffats were experts at using it to shield their true intentions.
Me shielding my intentions has helped you out thus far, has it not?
So you say. A shame we have to take your word for it.
Such is the way of the world, I'm afraid. Some people could just see a bit further down the road.
Of course.
Simply talking to a Moffat was a labyrinthine process. Even if Vorin made it through the maze, he still didn't know where he was. Moffat smiled at him knowingly, smug in the fact that he had, yet again, bested another who would see his secrets outed. In a way, Vorin felt like he was the odd man out. Even his partner, his best friend, was keeping things from him. Of course, Riva would only do that for one reason, to protect him. Riva took his vows seriously. He would, without a thought, give his life for Vorin. But Vorin wasn't a child. He'd weathered terrible things, and he was sure he could endure whatever Riva was making Salvatore hide from him. Eventually, the group saw their surroundings thin, the strange growths dwindling, the moans and groans of an ever-unsated stomach falling to mere whispers. In the distance hung the shapes of towers and crooked buildings, with strange fires burning somewhere amongst them.
Arcos, what is that over there?
That is Murkmero. We will not be going there.
What, no horribly morbid story? No, it's a town built upon the beating hearts of saints, or the houses are made from the skulls of thousands of burnt babies, or maybe the denizens of the town peeled off their own flesh and instead wear the foreskin of their fallen fertility god.
Jesus, Salvatore.
Really? You stomach orders from a disgusting jelly monster, but you draw the line at dick jokes? Arcos interrupted the banter.
The town is full of disciples of the last Interfectorum. As I understand it, you've already had an encounter with them. We should make camp soon.
Yes, of course.
The group walked across a sparsely populated meadow, the grounds bedecked with the horses of old farmhouses and burnt-out shacks. Arcos led the way, stomping forward with the certitude of a lumbering ox. He pointed to a hollowed-out skeleton of a house.
Set up your tents and fire in there.
Does Murkmero send out patrols?
Perhaps.
Well, what if they...
Then I will kill them.
Someone's in a mood. Arcos looked at Salvatore and growled. The giant thing lumbered toward him.
Here, take your dead weight.
Arcos unceremoniously heaved Wesley into Salvatore's arms, almost tossing him. Sal's eyes narrowed into razors at the Chimera's insult. What did you just call him?
Salvatore, do we have to?
No. This piece of shit has had a chip on his shoulder ever since we threw hands. He fucking helps those cyberpunk wannabe nerds abduct and experiment on us, and then walks around as if he's the one who's been fucking wronged. Salvatore walked up to the Goliath and poked him in his massive chest. Here's the truth of it, dickhead. I couldn't give two fucks for your little boo-hoo history with the Belfine. So if you want to go another round, take a fucking swing. Arcos' face contorted into a malign assortment of teeth and rage. His arm reared back and began to plunge towards Salvatore's face. At the same time, Sal's eyes birthed a horde of horrible serpentine creatures, all darting toward the heaving giant.
Asilos, against us!
Fuck!
Knock it off!
The ground trembled at Riva's words, and whispered curses floated about like darksome butterflies. Arcos and Sal continued to heave and cough, gripping themselves in pain. As they writhed on the ground, Riva picked up a log and set it down. He nonchalantly took a seat and signed for Vorin to make a fire. Vorin did so, then took a seat next to his friend. It was hard to get on Riva's last nerve, but the constant conflict between Arcos and Sal seemed to have finally plucked it. The two would be fine, of course, but a statement had to be made. Eventually, Sal and Arcos stopped heaving. Sal stormed off, putting up his tent, while Arcos glared at Riva. Yet Riva would not be intimidated. He simply glared back at the monstrous beast. With a final glower, Arcos stalked off to the perimeter of the camp to keep watch and heal his wounded pride. Crimland is a Maltopia production. Today's episode was written by Stephen Anzalone. The episode was edited by Walker Kornfeld,
Sound production and editing was performed by Stephen Anzalone. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by searching Maltopia. That's M-A-E-L-T-O-P-I-A. And if you'd like to know more about Grimland and contribute to its nightmarish expansion, visit us at www.patreon.com/Maltopia, where you can gain access to all sorts of art, mythologies, stories, and more. For more information about Grimland and the world of Maltopia, visit us at maltopia.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.